All right. Hi. Gonna talk about my kind of amateur adventures in pollen forecasting and kind of figuring out how these things work and how I can use them. So I'll start with a little bit of introduction. So my name's Scott. I live in Finland. When you think of Finland, think of some icy cold place, which it is for maybe too much of the year. This is a picture I took when I was walking on the sea, very cool. But eventually, winter does end, the snow melts, and we get to this big landscape of lots of trees and lots of grass and lakes and lots of nature. Shortly after I took this picture, it returned to this again. And this was actually as late as the 23rd of April this year, which made everyone very sad. Finally, we got to some nice weather. Again, like I'm saying, forest. So many trees. I love trees, and it's so nature-y. And yeah, summer is here. Everyone's very happy that summer comes. But for a lot of people, it also means it's pollen season. And I'm one of those people. I suffer from mostly birch and grass pollen allergy. At the moment in Finland, we've pretty much just finished with birch and about to start grass. UK has got grass at the moment, so I'm having a little bit of a time. And this morning, on the morning that I make a talk about pollen allergy, I forgot to take my pollen medicine until the symptoms had started. So, But let's do a little bit of a recap about what is pollen. People sneeze and they don't really think about what is happening, but it's how plants make more plants. You have like flowers on the plants that are producing pollen, and then there's other parts of flowers that need to consume the pollen to create more plants. And sometimes a plant can use its own pollen, but usually the pollen has to be transmitted between plants. And you know, most of the time we think about bees as doing this, and bees do a lot of this, and they do a lot of getting to the hard to get to places. But there's also a lot of transmission done by things like the wind and also other animals. And the reason it makes you sneeze is that sometimes your immune system, if you're allergic to pollen, will see this pollen and be like, hey, this is bad, I want to protect against this. And it releases this substance called histamine. This goes and sort of tells your immune system to strengthen up, but it also is what actually causes the allergic reaction. Luckily, we have some relief in the form of, for me, it's this cetirizine hydrochloride. This is the active ingredient in the stuff that I use. Without this, I would be suffering a lot more than I do. I just wanted to mention this talk, this video that I watched recently about antihistamines and the history of them and development. This will give a much better explanation than I ever could, but I recommend to go and watch that if you want to know more about these different active ingredients that are available and what the difference is. I talked about there's bees that are transmitting this pollen, and also the wind, and there's sort of these two different ways that pollen gets around. If you're allergic to grass and you go walk in some long grass, you're probably going to have an allergic reaction, and you can kind of control that by not walking in the long grass. Or in my case as well, with birch trees, walking in a flowering forest, the forest that is actively producing pollen, because it's going to get blown around by the wind, and you're going to rub against plants and stuff, and it's not going to be good for you. But there's also this long range transmission where pollen goes from one place to another, and you can't really control whether you're going to be exposed to that or not, apart from by not going outside, which is usually not much of an option for you. But what we can do is we can at least know, if I go outside today, is there going to be a lot of pollen in the air? I have been using for the years that I've lived in Finland this website called Norco, and it's run by University of Turku in the southwest of Finland. They used to have very in-depth information about like which different parts of Finland have like different types of pollen in the air, and it would be, you know, day by day, and it was kind of good enough. But they unfortunately lost some funding this year, and they scaled back their operations, and now they give this sort of more like overview. Next few days, well, there's going to be this kind of pollen. And in fact, it actually changes quite a lot day by day. So it was sort of not as useful to me anymore, and a little bit dissatisfying. So I went and was sort of like, okay, where are they figuring this out? How are they doing the forecast? And I found out that actually they get their data from Finnish Meteorological Institute. So the weather people. It's a publicly funded organization in Finland, like in many other countries. Like Met Office, I think, is still hopefully publicly funded. I went and found that, okay, they have this model called SILAM, and I just love the how they have kind of made this acronym out of something that is not really a good acronym. You can see it at the top that it's like taking the third letter and the fifth letter, and yeah, but. This model is mainly for dispersion of things in the atmosphere. So they use it for forecasting where smoke will go from wildfires. Also in Finland, people are big on like air quality, and they use it for that, like particulates, how they're going to disperse through the air in cities especially. And they also do pollen, which is what I was interested in here. So I went and checked this out, and I'm like, okay, yeah, like what actually is here? And I went and found this, they have this data service that you can go to, and you can like find the different data sets, and this is from the pollen data set, and within that there's all these different variables. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is talking about pollen. There's definitely pollen in the name of many of these. Which ones make sense? So I kind of selected a few and was like, yeah, okay, birch I'm allergic to, grass I'm allergic to, let's select a couple of them. Pollen index, that sounds interesting. Download it and sort of look, okay, I can open this file. You see down in the bottom, the output format is this netcdf. I'm like, I don't know what the heck that is. Googled it and found that, okay, you can download this NASA program, which, by the way, for NASA, they should probably step up their game in the kind of software they distribute, because it's quite janky, but you know, it's still NASA and it works. You can open up the file, you see, okay, yeah, there's birch pollen, grass pollen, and there's this pollen index, all these things. You can double click on one and open it up and you see a map. Okay, cool. This is, I think this was for the other day. You get like a map, and you have different variables that you can change there for displaying on the map. So the time, that one was for the 3rd of June, and you've got the height at which you're looking at the pollen. So that's 12.5 meters above ground level, which they count as just ground level. I think maybe it's above sea level, not sure. And you get this data, and you can kind of see it, and you could use this as your pollen forecast if you want, and it's very high resolution, you know. But I was kind of like, okay, I should probably find out how I can actually use this stuff. So I sent an email to the Finnish Meteorological Institute and said, can I use this? How can I use this? And I was very happy when they responded. The maintainers of the model responded to me and told me lots of information, more information than I asked, and in very much detail. They said basically, yeah, the pollen index that you saw from there, you can use that. And also, here's how it's calculated. And they put their code in line in the email, and it was in a language that I don't know. And it was, but you know, it was there. Also, this related variable, polysource, which is like kind of the species for this pollen index. So you get kind of like how much pollen is there, and like what is causing there to be lots of pollen, which is, it's good enough for me at least. And you know, these are happening at surface level, that 12.5 meters above sea or ground or whatever it is. And you can use it however you want. But just acknowledge us and also the European Aeroallergen Network, who they work with. So there are those two organizations together. And yeah, I was very happy with this. This is how a public institution should work, and I'm proud to pay my taxes. And then they also linked me to some papers, and they, you know, on the micro level of this model, it's very, very complicated, and I could not understand it, although it is described in papers in great detail. But there was at least one paper talking about how the birch pollen emission and dispersion is done, and that one I could understand some of it. And they explained kind of the high level concept. So you have basically three parts to how does pollen get around in there. They predict, first of all, when are plants going to be flowering, when is birch going to be flowering, and that's based mostly on temperature. And then they predict, okay, when there's plants that have this pollen available on them, when is that going to be emitted into the air? So This is caused by things like mostly wind and just general atmospheric turbulence. And it's also prevented by things like rain and humidity, which you would expect. When it rains, you know, the stuff in the air goes down. And then it also stays humid for a bit afterwards, so the pollen levels remain, or at least the emission of pollen remains low. And then sort of the core part of this whole model, SILAM, that does the smoke dispersion and all the other types of stuff, is this dispersion in the atmosphere, or long-range dispersion. That put them all together, and then you can sort of see where is the pollen coming from, where is it like going out into the air, and then how is it being spread out across the land. Across the atmosphere, and then again back down to ground level, where people then have allergic reaction. So I then went back to these data sets and saw, okay, yeah, I have this pollen index, and yeah, it explains here that it's a pollen index based on hourly means and thresholds from this lookup table. That is one of the people who was responding to me, and thank you very much to them. And their code that they sent in the email, the amount that I could understand was that basically they have come up with these thresholds of amount, concentration of pollen in air that would have some allergic reaction. And it's different for each type of pollen. And yeah, you can just go through like time series and you get this for each coordinate, a different level from very low to very high, 1 to 5. And the pollen source, same kind of thing. You just have a number corresponding to different types of pollen. You've got coordinates and you've got time series. And very cool thing that you can look at this pollen source is that you can look at it on a map and see that, like, oh yeah, different places that have different temperature climates, the flowering is happening at different times, and so the different types of pollen that are in the air are different in different places, and it's very distinct. You can see it from south to north. And like I said before, birch is just finishing in most of Finland. It's still in the north a little bit. It's this blue. And I think the orange is grass. And you can see that that now starts to be a bigger thing. And soon it comes for me in Finland. Interesting thing in this data, it's using this coordinates in a rotated pole grid. This was something that they didn't explain in their email. I think because they are climate or atmospheric scientists, and this is obvious to them because it's a very common thing I've come to learn in atmospheric science, atmospheric data, that they will use this rotated pole grid. It took me a very long time to find some information about this. You can look at the data set and see like where is the data set. Normal coordinates, the coordinates that we use most of the time, latitude and longitude, they are sort of happening with zero is like through Greenwich Meridian, right? But our data set, the zero, sort of like the center of it, is not in Greenwich. It's somewhere over towards rest of Europe. And they allow you in this data set to include this like 2D latitude, longitude to file, and that includes then some kind of mapping table that you can use to look it up. But it's in kind of the wrong direction. You can go from the rotated pole grid to the normal coordinates, but not the other way without making big mapping in memory. Actually, I emailed them and asked them, like, what is this? And they sent me back, oh, yeah, it's easy. You can just use this command. They did not explain what is CDO, although I could find it. But this was still sort of part of some suite of tools that it was very scary to me. So I sort of went and endeavored to find out, like, how does it work? Basically, they rotate where is the pole on the sphere of the Earth. It was very hard to sort of understand this in three dimensions in my mind, but they move the pole and then all the coordinates are just offset. I ended up managing to find a way of doing it with this library called Proj, which has all these kind of map projections and translations. And they have one that lets you just move the pole, although it does not have the same name. That name, rotated pole grid, is only used in atmospheric science. So now I have all these different parts, and I can get the data set and put it all together. So we're going to fetch this data set from each midnight. That's when they run the model and give a new output data file. Then I want to be able to give it kind of an address or some coordinates. If I give it address, it should look up the coordinates. And for that, I decide, okay, I can use some OpenStreetMap sort of geocoding geocoding API and get some coordinates for an address. Then I need to translate it to this rotated pole coordinates. So I'm going to use that proj thing to do that. And then what I can do is I can just look up, like, for a location, the pollen index and the source of pollen for that index. And let's do it for, like, the day and the next 2 days in the local time zone. And I put it all together and I made this website called pollen.party. And I'm using this, like, most days just to check, like, oh, is it going to be a bad day for me today? And it's very very simple. It just gives you a table of data. It's color-coded, and it's sort of like, okay, yeah, it's going to be fine today in the morning. It's going to get bad later today. So maybe if I'm going to go for a walk, I'll do it in the morning, or stuff like this. And this is, like, big improvement to my life, to have this resolution of data rather than just, like, on this day, it's bad. And in my experience, it's pretty accurate as well. Little page of stuff for the nerds. I did this with Rust as, like, a little learning experiment. Well, I have been working with Rust from time to time, but it was an opportunity to do a little hobby project and use what I wanted to do. This data format that you get as output from the model, it's this netcdf, and there's a crate for that, and then I read it into some n-dimensional array, and then you get sort of your latitude, longitude, or sorry, rotated latitude and longitude, your time, and then also if you need to do other stuff like the elevation, but it doesn't apply to at least the pollen index. And then this proj, there is, like, bindings for Rust, and yeah, if you would like to have a look at the code, it's all up on GitHub there. It's my username, and it's the pollen.party repo, but please be kind about my Rust code. There's also an API, which I have not documented yet, which I made in a rush for being able to do something very cool for EMF, which is that you can call the pollen phone number, the pollen hotline, and if you dial POLN, it will tell you the forecast for right now and the next 2 days at EMF. So Few more things to do. I'd like to put this into Home Assistant. That was also one of the original motivations. I'd like to separate out the different types of pollen, but first I need to do a bit more understanding about what makes sense and how this pollen index is formulated. And maybe do some alerts as well, so I don't have to manually check it in the morning each day. But yeah, there's the phone number, POLN 7656. There's the website, pollen.party. And I hope it's useful to you if you also suffer from pollen allergy. Thank you very much.